Good morning, everybody. Hi, I'm Carolyn. I am an alcoholic. And I just got back from a week in Vegas. And I work for a furniture company, and we have furniture market out there. So I just got back. I'm a little off schedule because of the time change. So this is a little early, and I'm a little tired. But anyways, I feel honored to be here, to come up here and share my story with you. My sobriety date is February 23rd, 2012. So I am coming up on a birthday. And I just wanted to say, in case I run out of time at the end, that this 30, 45 minutes, I could not explain all the wonderful blessings that have happened to me since I got sober. And I didn't get sober by myself, and I don't stay sober by myself. I'm grateful for my higher power and for you guys in these rooms. And anyways, I just wanted to start with that. And as I wrote, I felt like I wrote a book, so I'll try to keep it as short as possible. I was born in East Point, Atlanta, East Point Hospital. And I don't know if too many people are not from Atlanta anymore, it seems like. But anyways, I was born in East Point, Atlanta. We lived in East Point, and then we lived in Jonesboro. My dad died when I was very young. I have an older sister and a younger sister, and I'm the middle child. My dad died when I was about 6 years old. And I remember he died in a motorcycle accident. And I remember before that, he had gotten into another car accident. And I remember he had a large scar down his center. He had gotten a car accident and ruptured his spleen, and it was a very dangerous accident. And I mention that because, you know, later in life I was warned that I might have this disease, you know, that my father, he died when he was young. He was in his late 20s. And we were all just little kids, you know. My sister was 4, my younger sister was 4, my older sister was 10. You know, I remember being at, our friend's house when we heard of the news that he had gotten in this accident. And I think he died instantly. And anyways, so, you know, from what I understand, he drank and he took pills, you know, so, and then his mom died in a mental institution. And so there's mental illness in our family and alcoholism from very far back. And really, I don't know why she died in a mental institution or what her past was or anything like that. But after he passed away, I remember it was very hard for my mom, of course, and she was raising 3 girls on her own. And we moved to Riverdale at that point. You know, she had a friend in real estate, and she started selling real estate, and we moved to Riverdale, and we lived over there. My uncle lived with us for some time, you know, when we lived there, and then my mom started dating a guy in one of his friends, and they ended up getting married, and we moved to Jacksonville, Florida. And then in Jacksonville, I think I was around 10 years old when I took my first drink. We moved to Jacksonville, and we lived in a small house, and some friends came over, and we were hanging out in the carport, and I remember they brought something over, and that was my first drink. And probably around 12 or 13, I ended up smoking weed, pot, weed, whatever you want to call it, herb. So I was very young when I started, you know, experimenting with drugs, alcohol, and all that stuff. To go back a little further, just to let you know a little bit about my history, there was sexual abuse from when I was very young. And I won't get into all that. I just share that because that's part of my story and maybe a part of a lot of people's story in this, you know. So anyway, so then I started, you know, middle school, would smoke or drink here and there, you know. In high school, me and a girlfriend from high school, we would go out to sneak in bars and get in bars, during the week in high school. I don't even know how we did that, you know. I was very shy, you know. I didn't have a lot of friends in school. You know, I always felt kind of awkward. I think there was a lot of depression from when I was younger, from my dad passing away. You know, just feeling lonely or lost or missing him in my life. I remember that a lot, you know, just feeling very sad. And in high school, somebody that I knew had committed suicide. I remember feeling very depressed about that. So I feel like a lot of my childhood, it was fun, and we did, you know, my grandparents helped raise me, and we had great summers with my grandparents. Even after I was in Jacksonville, we would still come to Atlanta and spend summers with them. It's not like I had this, you know, sad, sad, somber life, but I remember being sad a lot in my life. And, as a child. And in high school then, you know, started drinking with my friend, you know, in high school, and that became, you know, when I drank, I always drank too much. You know, it wasn't like at that point in my life I wasn't drinking daily, but when I did drink, I would drink too much. I'd black out or, you know, pass out or throw up or whatever. And anyways, let's see what else. I feel like I'm stumbling through this. Anyway, so me and this girlfriend, we'd sneak into bars. We would, eventually we went to this place, Crawdaddy's. I don't even know how we got in, you know, cause we were under 21. We were probably barely 18. And then I graduated high school, and we were still going to this one club bar, and I met my future husband. And we met quickly, we moved in together quickly, we got married quickly, and I was pregnant and I was having a baby. And I was 18 when we got married, and I had my son when I turned 19. And a couple years later I had my daughter. So by the time I was 21, I already had both of my children, we already had two children. And Vince was a few years older than me. He was, you know, he had his own business. He had, you know, some things together, and he made me feel like he was going to take care of me. You know, I had security in that relationship with him. And we had a lot of fun. You know, we had our children young, and we traveled a lot. You know, we had our own business, and, you know, times were really good. You know, we drank occasionally, you know, just at like special occasions. We'd, you know, smoke weed occasionally. It wasn't anything out of control or anything crazy, at that point in my life when we were raising our kids, you know. But here, we're still very young, you know. And then as time went on, as our kids got older, you know, I'm still young, you know, and, anyways, as the kids were maybe in middle school, that age, we were going to church regularly. I had started going to this church, and it was a Church of Christ, and it was a little controlling. It was a little controlling, where if you didn't go to church, you know, people called you up. If you didn't go Wednesday night, why weren't you there? Why didn't you bring your kids? You know, if your kids didn't go to church camp, you know, why weren't they? Well, you're not in a good spot in your relationship with God if your kids aren't doing all this, you know. So, I felt like that was something that for a while it was like, we go to church every Wednesday, you know, and I was trying to push my husband to do this, and it caused a lot of conflict in our marriage. You know, he was like, you know, they're controlling and we don't have to do this. And I was like, yes, we need to do all this. And so, anyway, something started happening in the church where, and it was a discipleship program. Like, you met with your discipleship partner weekly. You know, we studied the Bible, which was great, you know, and I learned a lot out of the Bible. But, for the control part, it wasn't healthy, I don't think, you know, by any means, you know. It wasn't a way to have a relationship with God. Where I felt like if I didn't do something, oh my God, you know, I'm not okay, you know, or whatever. So, and I think some things from my past that the control, I always got into a relationship was where I felt controlled. You know, my ex-husband, he was controlling. You know, I didn't get out of hand when we were together because he would say, oh, you've had enough, or you need to stop, or whatever. Left on my own devices, I would have just been a full-blown alcoholic at a very younger age. But because I was with Vince, you know, he was kind of controlling things in our lives. So, and here then I'm joining a church, and that's very controlling. And I started working. I had helped him in his business as our kids were growing up, and then eventually I started working outside, doing working in retail, and I couldn't go to church every Sunday. And this church started falling apart, and all this. So I quit going. And the farther I got away from church, the more we started partying. You know, then it was like the kids were older; they were hanging out with their friends. You know, we would go out on Friday night, Saturday night, drinking and partying, and I, you know, they didn't need me all the time, the kids. So this became easier for me to, you know, start drinking and stuff more. And, you know, my story does include drugs and alcohol. So I do mention that a little bit. We started partying with friends and doing coke, you know, a lot. And so this was like the last, you know, maybe 5 years that we were together. We were drinking and doing coke a lot and taking pills, snorting pills. I mean, you know, it was never enough. Nothing was ever enough. We wrecked a few cars together. One time I was driving home and I went over a median and I had torn the transmission off. You know, we didn't know till the next day. I mean, I had totally wrecked this car. I don't know how we got home, you know. I don't know how I didn't get a DUI. I've never gotten a DUI. Not yet. So, that's just not part of my story. I don't know how. And then another time, Vince and I were out drinking and we were driving and we went through somebody ran us off the road. It was always somebody else's fault, you know. And, somebody had ran us off the road and we went in this median and we couldn't, I mean, went into a ditch in the middle of the road and we couldn't get the car out, and friends were following us. So we got in their car, left the car there and went to their house and kept partying. You know, another time we were over this friend's house, and, when we were with them, we were doing all kinds of things. So when we were with, we decided to drive home that night. We drove home and this kid had pulled out and he had like this big illegal bumper on his car that he had manufactured or whatever. And when we hit our car started burning, and the cops came, and our Tahoe burned down. And we got out and we were messed up. The cops came and we went home. I went to the emergency room and one of my girlfriends came, and I was all, my hands were bloody, my knees were bloody. You know, it was just a mess, but we never got any, you know, we never got into any trouble. At this point in our lives, we were really partying a lot and fighting a lot. And I wanted to drink. I wanted to go out with my friends and drink all the time. And he rather stayed home and do his stuff, you know, and stuff like that. So it just became, you know, drugs and alcohol were more important to both of us than our relationship at that point in our lives, which is very sad. And now looking back, I can see that, you know. I don't think I was happy for a while in that relationship, but, you know, I don't know if it was because of the drugs and alcohol. I didn't give it a chance. One day we got in a big fight. I wanted to go out and he didn't want to go out, and I had been drinking, and his saying for me was just like, you don't know when to stop, you know? And it wasn't that I didn't know when to stop. I didn't know how to stop. You know, once I started drinking, I couldn't stop. And, so we had gone out, we had gotten in a fight at a restaurant bar, and, that was it. I had had enough. I went home, I packed my clothes in my car, and I left him. And I went and stayed with a good friend of mine, Abby, and, we've been friends forever, since our kids were little bitty things. And we had gone through a lot together. We had gone to this church together, we had quit the church together, you know, and now we were drinking buddies, you know, So anyways, I moved in with her, and we were, same thing, drinking, doing less drugs, but drinking, you know, just as much. And, you know, if I stayed out too late, she'd say, you know, I'm worried, you're burning the candle at both ends, you know, what are you doing? You know, and that was her nice way of saying, you're really going to get yourself into some trouble. You know, I had been married for 23 years since I was 18 years old, and now I was single. And I was partying it up and going out and staying out with people I didn't know and just doing all kinds of crazy stuff, you know. So after I was with her about a year, and Vince and I had been separated for about a year, then I moved to Sandy Springs. I got my own place, and this, at like 42 years old, this was the first time I ever lived by myself. And this is where I believe my alcoholism really took over, you know, because before I was drinking, you know, not drinking always, but then it eventually got where I was drinking all the time, and it was causing this my relationship with my ex to just be exploding. And then with this roommate, you know, drinking, but seeing, okay, I need to move out. And from there, nobody was telling me what to do, you know, giving me warning signs or you're doing this too much. It was like, for the first time in my life, I was really on my own, you know, and it was like nobody saying you can or can't do something. So it was a good thing and a dangerous thing for me, you know? So I moved to Sandy Springs, the lodge on the Chattahoochee. And when I went there to go look at the apartment, the leasing agent, she became a good friend of mine. She was single, partier, you know, and I was like, I don't think I could live on my own. I've never done it. I was scared about paying rent, scared about just everything. I had never, my ex-husband paid our bills. He took care of everything. If something happened, I called Vince. I didn't know how to handle anything in life. You know, I never paid a bill. I never did anything that I needed to. If I made a mess in life, he fixed it. He cleaned it up. And so, the thought of paying bills, that was terrifying to me. So anyways, I got this apartment. I made a new buddy, a good partying buddy, and it was about a mile from North River Tavern. And I don't know if y'all know that over here, but anyways, it's a local bar that they will serve you as much as you want till as long as you want. People are just passing out at the bars. It doesn't matter, you know? And, but they had a bouncer and he wouldn't let me drive. He would not let me drive. So I would do the walk of shame a lot of days and walk back to get my car from my apartment. I would take Safe Ride and taxis sometimes. Sometimes I would drive. So this is where, you know, I was just really drinking pretty heavily every day and blacking out. I was driving. I'd lose my car. If I ended up going from North River Tavern to somewhere else, I wouldn't remember where I left my car. And, so it was becoming really bad. I got a promotion at work and I was supposed to be there at like 5 a.m. for inventory. I worked at Men's Warehouse at this time. And I had gone to, you know, North River the night before to celebrate my promotion. You know, I didn't know where my keys were. My phone was at 5 the next morning. I didn't know. I was like, oh my God, I've got to be there at work to do this inventory at this new store. And I didn't know where anything was. And, I got there and of course I reeked of alcohol, I'm sure. But anyways, I did that for a little bit longer. And then I met Paul, my husband now, and we met at North River Tavern, and we would also meet, we would see each other at a couple different places, and his boss lived in my apartment complex, so he would see me, around and stuff. And as we started seeing each other and dating, and we were drinking together, but something was different. It was like the next morning when I woke up, I was ashamed. You know, it was like, here I've met this guy that I like, and now I just feel like a fuck up. You know, I feel like I'm a mess. I can't stop drinking, and when I drink, I'm falling. You know, or I can't drive, or I'm driving, and I shouldn't be driving. And, you know, I was really just disgusted with myself. And so I don't remember. He was out of town. We had been seeing each other for maybe about a year. And he was out of town, and I'm trying to think of anything I've left out, but anyways, he was out of town, and I had already started thinking about, you know, I had already started trying to, well, if I don't drink vodka and I drink, you know, trying to do the mixes, figuring out the mix. If I only have 4 instead of 6, you know, all this stuff, what we try to do, you know, then maybe I won't get the way I'm getting, you know? And we had gone to a Christmas party, and I had gotten drunk, you know, and I remember him saying, you know, remember, you're not supposed to start with, you know, don't start with vodka or whatever the mix was at that time, you know. Don't do this because that's going to happen. And it was too late. I had already gone beyond, you know, and he drove home, and I got out of the car and I couldn't walk and I fell on my face, you know. And so this is where alcoholism took me, you know. This is my addiction where it took me. And something happened inside of me that I was like, some of the scriptures that I learned from that church that I really didn't care for. You know, one day I was, I would go a walk and exercise and stuff like that as best I could, hungover. And I don't know if you know on, what is that street called over there? Roberts Drive. There's Island Ford. It's this beautiful park over there, a national park over there. And it goes down, it winds down into, down by the river. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful trail over there. And I would go walk over there, because it was across from where I lived and stuff. And I would pray to God, God, help me not to drink. Help me not to hurt myself or somebody else. I don't know, you know, I know something's not good. This isn't good any longer. And the scripture came to my head that stop sinning or something worse will happen to you. And, that's in John 5:14, by the way. And so some of the things I learned from this church came, you know, the scriptures, God's word came through to me, when I needed it. And, I had started praying, you know, looking, seeking help, started seeing a counselor. I'm like, I've got to do something. I can't keep going on like this. At this point, I still didn't know if I really wanted to quit drinking or if I just needed to learn how to control my drinking or, you know, what my issues were and all that stuff. And, I started seeing somebody and she suggested that I start, you know, trying to control my drinking. And in the trying to control my drinking, I realized I really, really cannot stop. I cannot go a day without picking up alcohol. And, that realization became very scary to me. I was like, oh my God, I really can't stop. I really can't go a day. Even when I start in the morning and say, okay, I'm not going to drink today, you know, by 5, 6, 7 o'clock, it's like, okay, I have to. And, at this point, I'm like so shaky every day, you know, I'm physically addicted. And so Paul was out of town and I called, the hotline, the AA hotline. And they put me in with, they gave me to a number to 8111, and I called there and talked to somebody there. And she's like, whatever you do, try to get to, a meeting today before the alcohol is out of your system. And so I had called my mom and I called my sisters, and, you know, growing up, we were always very close, me and my mom and my sisters, you know, and we could joke about, okay, I drink too much. But then at some point I called Lynn and I said, okay, this isn't funny anymore. I know I joke about being an alcoholic, but I need to go get help. I need help, you know? And so, you know, we're all very supporting each other. You know, we've been there for each other through so much. And so I end up going to my mom's, who lives in Ackworth, and I'm still living in Sandy Springs. And, you know, she says, I have some wine in the refrigerator. Do you want me to, you know, you might need to drink some when you get here. She's a nurse. And she said, you know, your withdrawals could be really bad and, you know, you could have seizures and stuff. And I said, no, I want you to pour it out. When I get there, I don't want anything there. Now, this isn't something that I would normally have ever said. You know, this was God doing for me what I could not do for myself. Because, first of all, it was a Friday, so I would have definitely not chose to get sober on a Friday. It would have definitely been a Monday. And I wouldn't have told her to pour it out. I would have thought, well, that sounds like a great idea, you know? Just one more, you know, for the road. Just one more. And so when I went to her house and she had made dinner, we ate dinner, and then she's like, well, you know, Hal Place has a meeting at 8 o'clock if you want to go. And I'm like, okay, you know, because I don't know how to sit still. I don't know what to do with myself anyways without a drink in my hand. So I said, okay, let's go. So we come up here and we go to an 8 o'clock meeting. And this starts my journey in sobriety, you know, and it, to me, this place means so much to me. You know, I'm so grateful for this place. At the time, I don't, you know, remember anybody from the meeting specifically. There was a young girl. She gave me her a list of numbers. I never called anybody on the list. But I mean, you know, but that's what we do, you know, and so I came to this meeting and the next day I called and I said, Mom, I'm going to go home. I'm going to go to a meeting over in Sandy Springs and then I'll come back tonight. So Saturday I got up and I went to a meeting at 8111. Again, like when I think about this and people getting sober, I think, I mean, I was just like, okay, let's get this done kind of thing. I was like, this is what's happening now. It wasn't like I was in control of this, you know? And so I went there and went to a meeting and then, came back and at Saturday at 8 o'clock, I came to y'all's speaker meeting here. And I related to the guy's story. I don't even remember who it was, but I really related to his story. And I was like, I've got, this is something I have to do now. I need to be sober. I cannot drink again. And it was so powerful that, I was afraid to drink. I was full of fear at this point of, I don't know how to not drink and I don't know how to stop drinking. You know, I don't know what to do. And so, but y'all gave me comfort when I came in the rooms, you know, and I felt okay here. And when I went back to my house, you know, I just continued to go to meetings over at 8111. And I went to a meeting every day, you know, cause I heard in the meetings, if you drink every day, you need to go to a meeting every day. And so that's what I did. And you guys suggested to get a sponsor. And if I worked the steps, it would relieve the desire to take a drink. And I was like, oh my God, I've got to get a sponsor. I need to work the steps. You know, whatever you guys told me and I saw you guys staying sober, then that's what I did because I was so desperate to stay sober. I was so scared of what was going to happen if I didn't. And I think the visions of and thoughts of my dad, and, you know, I don't know if some of you believe this about your ancestry and stuff like that, but I felt like this was a message from beyond. This was, if you don't stop, something will happen to you. You know, I mean, I was in my 40s, but, you know, I thought about my dad having multiple car accidents, you know, and that's, you know, I had children. I didn't want to go. I wasn't ready to go. Even though I was living suicidally in my life, I didn't want to die. I just didn't know how to live, you know. I didn't know how to be free and to live and enjoy my life. And so I took seriously what you guys taught me in here. And I remember seeing somebody in the rooms pick up a white chip, and I was like, oh my God, they drank? Why did they drink? You know, I was like, I didn't get it, you know, that this is a disease and that this is a struggle that we may have the rest of our lives to stay sober. And I'm glad I've only picked up one white chip so far. But I know that I only have a daily reprieve in this. And that today the benefits of me staying sober outweigh the benefits of me taking a drink ever. And I don't care how bad things get, you know? And I started working with a sponsor. I have an awesome sponsor. She's the same sponsor I've had the whole time. And her birthday is February 14th. Her sobriety date. And mine's February 23rd, so we usually pick up our chips together. And she goes to Alpharetta meetings, but I had met her in 8111. And she didn't tell me to call her every day. Because I thought, if somebody tells me, when I came in, I said, if they tell me like that church told me, then this isn't going to work. If they tell me I have to do something, it's not going to work. But y'all didn't tell me I had to do anything. Y'all suggested that if I wanted to stay sober, that these were the things that y'all did to stay sober. And that's how I took it. I was like, you know, nobody required anything of me. You didn't tell me I had to have a certain God. You didn't tell me I had to go to so many meetings. Y'all suggested 90 and 90, and I even asked where it was in the book. And it's not in here. It's a suggestion of people who've stayed sober, so I listened to you guys. And so I worked with the steps. I went to meetings. I went to big book studies. I went to 12 and 12 studies. I tried other meetings. One of the ladies in the rooms, she asked me to for coffee, and I was like, okay, you know, I'll go have coffee with you, but I already have a sponsor. She's like, oh, I just want to meet with you, you know. It's like, okay. You know, I wasn't looking to make friends. I was very, you know, standoffish, and I can still be that way, and I don't mean to be. I do protect my sobriety, and I try to be honest. I try to, the other thing that was instilled in with me is, you help with meetings, you know. I didn't really sign up for a home group at 8111, but I went to just about every meeting they had there, so I felt like every meeting was my home group. And, because if I woke up at 6:15, I'd go to a 6:15 meeting. I'd go to 5:45. I went to the 8 o'clock meeting at night. I went to Saturday at 9:30. Whatever it took is what I did. And so as I started working my steps, you know, I, the fourth step, and my sponsor was awesome because she didn't scare me about working the steps. She's like, this isn't a big deal. We're going to do it, and you're going to, you know, step 1, 2, 3, we'll do together. 4, we're going to do this. So I worked my fourth step. You know, we met 1 week, and broke it down in 4 different, you know, areas. And she's like, 2 weeks to work on it, we'll get together and we'll do it again. You know, it's like she didn't overwhelm me with this process. And that's what I needed. I didn't need somebody to tell me what to do, you know, like, or you're out. And I didn't, you know, cause I hear people say, well, you must call me every day. And I thought, if she told me to call her every day, I don't know if it would have worked for me, you know. But it took what it took for me to get sober. And this is how I work my program. And so I worked the steps, and I think making my amends was a big deal. You know, the fourth step was a big deal. But at the same time, this church that I went to, I had did a similar fourth step with them about going back through your past. Now I had more stuff added that I had to do. So, but making my amends, you know, as I moved out on my own, how scary that was, you know. So in my fourth step, my fears were much larger than my resentments. Like, how am I going to take care of myself? How am I going to, you know, I'm working for a company, they're paying me $10.99. You know, I owed so much in taxes. And I had only worked for the company a couple years. But if you're self-employed, automatically you owe $12,000 for the year. You know, it's like, I owed so much, you know. And I tried to quit my company, and they were like, no, we really want to keep you, you know. And so they gave me a raise, and they put me on as an employee, and I'm still with that company. I've been with that company for 6 years, you know. My relationships have changed with my family, with my daughter, my son, and even my ex-husband. Thursday night, Olivia called me, and she calls me after work every day about 5 o'clock, and we're on the phone together, and she said, she's driving, and all of a sudden she says, she's on, hands-free, and I heard something, and she screamed, and I said, Olivia, what's wrong? And she said, oh my God, Mom, a semi-truck just hit me. Oh my God, I'm bleeding. And I'm like, oh, we're both driving. I'm on 75, she's like on 400, you know, cause that's her route home. And she's like, I said, call 911. I don't know where she's at. And she said, call Bruce. And I hang up, we both hang up. And I call her husband, he's not answering, and I'm like, Bruce, answer the phone, you know. He finally answers. I'm like, Olivia's been in an accident. She got hit by a semi. I mean, I can only picture that she's crushed to death, you know. Anyways, 911 calls him, and she's okay. Her face is bleeding, but she's okay, and they're taking her to the hospital. And, you know, we're all going to meet there. We all need to see that she's okay. I call my son. I call my husband now. I call my ex-husband, you know. I don't know what's happened, you know, and I can only imagine, but it was the scariest thing. And I was thinking, as we're all there at the hospital, how cool that I don't have resentments and he doesn't have resentments toward me, my ex, you know, and that we were all pleasant with each other. I mean, that's a big deal. Like when I couldn't even, like after I would see him after we got divorced, I would be so sick and upset. You know, we were married so long and we had so much history together. And I don't hate him, you know, even though we went our different ways. And I hope that he doesn't hate me, you know. you know, we'll call each other when something's going on with the kids, you know, and, you know, we'll tell each other we're still family. He's still my family, my ex-husband, you know, and if it wasn't for the program, I don't know if I would have that same reaction or feeling toward him. And, Olivia's okay. And she's very sore and her car is probably totaled, but she's okay. I'm so grateful for that. And I continually see God working in my life, in my family's life. And, she's part of the reason I got sober was also in February. She called me. So the events that led up to me getting sober, you know, the Christmas party and falling and, you know, meeting Paul and wanting to have a relationship with him. And Olivia called me one night and told me she was pregnant and I was in a blackout and I don't remember the phone call. And then my friend Abby that I lived with, she called me and said, did you know Olivia's getting married on Valentine's Day? I was like, what? And I called Olivia and I said, Olivia, you know, I want to be there. Don't you want your dad or any of us to be there? And she wanted to make sure they were married, you know, before she had the baby. And, you know, and I did get to be there. And that's also the same month I got sober, February. And her husband are celebrating 6 years. You know, I get to pick up a 6-year chip, God willing, February 23rd. And Paul and I celebrate 2-year anniversary in February. We got married on February 20th in 2016. And so our lives have changed totally, you know, and this program has bled into every area and every person in my life. And, from my job to my family to, you know, my grandkids. I have 2 grandkids now. Demetrius is 5 and I was so worried about his shower. You know, that first year I was sober, I was like, oh my God, people are going to have, people want wine at the baby shower. You know, it's like, it's a baby shower. You know, just all the things that we go through that we forget you don't have to do with alcohol. You know, I'm so glad to be free from the bondage of alcohol. You know, I can go to a sports game. I can go to the Super Bowl party. I can go to Vegas. And, you know, and I don't have to pick up a drink, you know. About 6 months when I was sober, my nephew took his own life. And it was traumatic, very traumatic for our family. And he was 19 years old. And I was able to be there for my sister. You know, and some people had drinks because that's what they do at funerals and stuff like that, but I didn't have to. I didn't have to take Xanax. I didn't have to take any pills. I didn't have to do anything. I could just be there for her. And I still am. And the program has helped me to be a better sister to her and have compassion I can't even imagine losing my son, you know, at that age and stuff. Suicide's been a part of my life. I don't know why, but it has been and, you know, with losing a few people to it and that's part of this disease. And I don't know why he did it or anything. I guess we never do know why, but, I just bring that up because, I stay sober for him too today, but the number one person I stay sober for is myself. And that's a big deal. Like I'm not doing things for other people, you know, and, that's a big deal for me today. So anyways, thank you for letting me share my story. I appreciate it.